Prepare yourself for a physical therapy conference that will deliver a PT education hangover of epic proportions. Because we're going to Las Vegas.
Las Vegas!
This October, PT Pintcast presents the Tri-State Physical Therapy Conference, October 11th to the 13th in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
3 days of learning, networking, and, well, probably some good old-fashioned Las Vegas-style fun. With presentations by APTA President Sharon Dunn, State Chapter Presidents Chris Powers of California, John Hike of Arizona, and RJ Williams from Nevada. With your keynote presentation by Tim Flynn, focus talks on telehealth, medical marijuana, and motivational interviewing. Okay, just so we're clear, that's three different talks. We're not mixing medical marijuana with telehealth and motivational interviewing. Well, not yet, anyway. Tickets are on sale now. Get yours at ptpintcast.com. The Tri-State Physical Therapy Conference, October 11th to the 13th. What happens in Vegas? Well, you know how this ends. Had a great time talking to physical therapist Kathy Shirley. We ran into each other at a conference in Jacksonville, Florida, thanks to Brooks Institute of Higher Learning. She was there just taking part and came up and said, "Hey, I'm a listener of the show." And I said, "Great, let's get you on there." She had a bunch of great insight in a variety of topics, all just good stuff. And I said, "Listen, the topics are all over the place, but they're all valid if you're a PT, so let's give them an episode." And that's what today's about. Show is brought to you by Owens Recovery Science. They're a single source for physical therapists looking to add blood flow restriction training to your clinical practice. This is something that's, it's not new, and that's what Johnny Owens and the team says. It's nothing new. It's been around for a while, but I think it's being applied more and more, and the research is coming back. Johnny's a part of participating in the research. At one point, I think he said he had something like 20 different issues going on with research, and he's got his fingers in a lot of things. He's the guy, all right? Him and his team around the world, four major sports, NCAA, you name it, they're instructing physios on how to do it. So check them out online at owensrecoveryscience.com. Let's get on with the show.
All right, you ready to rock and roll? I'm going to hit record.
Yes, go ahead.
Let's do it.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
Welcome aboard.
This is the PT Pintcast. Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Yeah, the show that's supposed to sound like we're having a beer. The next episode of PT Pintcast starts right now. I'm your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay. We do want to say thank you to everybody out there who's been listening. And the show is always free, but we always say, if you ever want to repay us, and that's using air quotes, do that by just telling a friend, telling a colleague, letting someone else know about the program. Do it via social media or in person. So thank you for everybody who's doing that. We will want to see you if you are in Arizona, Nevada, or California coming up with the Tri-State Physical Therapy Conference. We're excited about that. Invited out there. Three state chapters coming together October 11, 12, and 13 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Going to have some presentations with the state president chapter for all three of those states. APTA's Sharon Dunn going to be there. Tim Flynn, Louis Puntadora, Sturdy McKee going to be out there. Alan Lee talking about telehealth. So check out more information at ptpintcast.com. The guest today ran into Kathy at Brooks IHL where we were a few weeks ago. And she said, "I actually listened to your show and I'm a sucker for someone who actually listens." Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. Yes, I do listen to your show, and it's awesome.
You know what? I'll be honest. You know, I forget sometimes after we have these conversations, because that's what they are. They're pretty conversational, that when they're done, I'm just like, well, that was a cool conversation. And I forget that other people will eventually listen to it.
Yes.
It's really weird
for
me. You get
to spread some good word.
Yeah. So tell the audience a little bit about your background, because we started talking and I was like, this sounds cool. You've done a bunch of stuff. So what's your background pretty briefly?
Well, I'm a physical therapist. I've been practicing for 38 years.
Yeah.
And I sort of moved through the flow of life and just kept on getting experiences that were in the area that I happened to be practicing in. And I moved a lot. So I got to see diversity within the country, within clinics, within rehab facilities, and it was a great learning experience and continues to be a great learning experience. And most recently, I was out in Texas for 7 years and had the opportunity to be an assistant faculty member, clinical faculty member there, and loved that. And as has sort of been the way that I've moved through life, it's because I am following my husband, who I always say to my students that I chose to stay married. It was a choice. And so that means you move along. So we moved again, and now I'm in Florida. And that's how we ended up at the Brooks IHL Symposium.
Yeah, in Jacksonville. And you were at, when you said you were in Texas, you did some teaching at Texas Women's University?
Yes, Texas Women's University and the Dallas campus. Yes, and it's a wonderful experience. And shout out to any of my former students who might be listening to this. I love you all. Miss you.
So you mentioned kind of moving all over geographically, but you switched between settings. What did you get to? What did you get to experience?
So I started out in the early 80s. Basically, everyone did some form of acute care because that was just the way it was. And so I started out in acute care, and I really loved it. Because of my final internships, I did two final internships. One was at Fort Bragg in the beginning of manual therapy, and all of the physical therapists at Fort Bragg, so the military system, army system, they were frontline practitioners. You know, they saw patients first. And so I saw that from the beginning of my career and knew what we were capable of doing. So I wanted to be a manual physical therapist, which, you know, most people enter PT school either wanting ortho or sports. But also I had been exposed to NDT at my final rehab affiliation, and with a brilliant instructor who had been there doing the adult certification. So I was sort of torn between the two. And I decided to move through both specialties at the same time. So whichever setting I might have been in, if one offered me more of an ortho background, then I really focused on that. If one offered me more neuro, that's what I did. So I really am pleased that that happened, because I believe it gave me a much different perspective on looking at an individual and their movement patterns and combining. I feel bad when we split, silo things up too much. You know, every patient in front of us has a nervous system. They have a skeletal system. You know, we can't separate those things, but sometimes I think we really try hard to do that.
Right.
So it was a great experience for me.
That's cool.
And I tried to just sort of spread that philosophy to the people that I worked with, and the students that I worked with, to be able to mix. That we can always mix.
Yeah. Well, whenever someone says they've been doing something for 38 years, first of all, like, good on you for sticking with a profession, as it's no doubt changed. I mean, I've been in the physical therapy profession for, you know, a blink of an eye compared to what you've been doing. So, and I've seen a lot of changes, or at least different discussions come and go. And the funny thing is, now I'm seeing it, is some of the things that we talk about, like, they're the thing, and then they fade out and something else fades in. And it's very, very cyclical. What are some of the big changes, things that you've seen come, go, and then come again? Like, you know, bell bottom pants were back in style for a little bit. Yeah. So that came, went, and came back in again.
That's right. Well, I think maybe the biggest thing that I would say is that, because I entered the profession when we were very much therapeutic exercise hands-on. That was like the big focus of the 70s, right? And then I graduated early, you know, 1981. So then it became the infancy of manual therapy, and it was the hot topic. Okay, so everybody started doing some form of manual therapy. And I was lucky in that I had a very eclectic background, so I had the opportunity to be exposed to Stanley Parris, who was the first to really bring horses to the United States, to the New Zealand, to Ola Grimsby, to Maitland, you know, so the Canadian philosophy. I had friends, international friends, who were really good at trying to teach me. So I had this eclectic background and never got pigeonholed in one way. But we went from very much therapeutic exercise, very specific, very strengthening and activity-based, to manual therapy, and then we sort of moved away from the exercise part of it.
Right.
And I was like, and then we started realizing, oh, no, we're doing too much hands-on, you know, like we're making our patients or thinking we're fixing them all the time. And, you know, and I was always trying to say, I don't want to fix anybody. And I was always really pushing back against, there's way too many modalities. There's way too much hands-on care. We have to have a mix. So then we see it coming back the other way. Now we have this, like, it's almost a hands-off.
Yep.
so it's, you're exactly right. You stay in this profession long enough and you see the cycles. It's just sort of like the tide coming and going.
I saw it on the faces of my professors because I would see something on social media, right? And I bring it to them and say, this is the new thing. And they literally had this face on and they were nice enough to nod along with me like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like they had, like they were ignoring me. But what I realized was is they had heard it probably several times throughout their career and they were just watching me see it for the, or experience it for the first time and going, uh-huh, yes, I understand that this is the thing at the moment. So like to at least recognize that just to let people know that, like you said, the tide will come and go. So, you know, wherever you're standing, it's probably somewhere in the middle is the right answer. If there even is a right answer. But I like how your career kind of brought you to all those different parts and you were able to kind of incorporate it. And that's what I want to bring up first is you've recently added some mental health first aid and health coaching certification to your credentials. How does that, first just describe that, and then how does that, you know, enhance your clinical practice?
So I've always been, and one of my favorite courses to teach was the psychosocial issues in rehab. So I've always been a physical therapist that recognized, like I can remember from like the beginning, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. There's all of us do this. Like we see two patients have the exact same diagnosis, had the same surgeon, they're the same age. It's like, and there's two totally different outcomes.
Right.
And you're like, okay, so what's going on with that? So the mental health issues, I think, in general, in our society are, it's improving. It's much better than it was, but we still have a stigma. It's still easier to avoid to just, oh, well, yeah, that person has that thing going on, but, you know, I don't have time to address that. And it doesn't work when we do that. So I found this mental health first aid.org and this mental health first aid certification program about four years ago. And brought it into university and have our students, that they have the opportunity to go through that. And I went through that. And so I really try to incorporate that both in my clinical practice, but also in teaching, that we have to talk very openly about mental health situations, mental health issues, not only of our patients, but also of our colleagues and ourselves.
Yeah.
And that we need to take really good care of ourselves. And, you know, and students are under great stress. You know, it's a significant amount of academic work we're throwing down their throats every day. They also have outside lives. Things don't always go well. And then how can they respond to, you know, I didn't necessarily do really well on this one test. And we have, you know, all the imposter syndrome situations that go on. And, you know, it's amazing to me. I really feel for our students and our young clinicians in trying to understand, hey, you're doing a great job. You know a whole lot more than you think.
Right.
You're going to be just fine. All right.
What was that program called again, Kathy? Mental Health Crusade?
Mental Health First Aid.
Oh, Mental Health First Aid. Okay. And so what's a couple things, you know, that you were able to take away from that certification that you feel like that's right in your holster that you're able to pull out real quick? Any like quick and easy tips that someone could take away from that?
Simply in that recognizing, understanding, or seeing that you learn about the different mental health situations or diagnoses. And so for example, anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and if you recognize the behaviors of anxiety, and then you can sit down and then just sort of give that person the ability to talk to you about it. There's also a huge push on recognizing that we might have an issue with suicide, you know, and that you don't leave that person's side. You find somebody to help them. You keep them talking, you know, but to recognize that, oh, this person is talking in a way that they're saying they're not really caring to be on the planet anymore.
Right.
Or, you know, there was something that went on in a certain test situation and their verbalization after that was very negative. Like, don't ignore that. We need to discuss that, you know, like, have you been considering committing suicide? I mean, and everybody gets really worried about, oh, if you say that, you give them the idea. And no, you're not going to give them the idea.
Right.
Have you thought about taking your own life? You know, and we do this with our patients also. Do you have, you know, do you have the instruments? Do you have the way to take
plan,
your own life?
Right.
Do you have a plan? Yeah. So it's like, and, you know, and is it going to really escalate? Then, well, I need to do something. And first thing is you're not leaving, you know, unless it's a safety situation. I mean, if they have a gun, they have something, we have to make sure that we are also safe.
Correct. So once you recognize it, what's the big That's what. And then now what? What's the now what with that? Is it? I'm guessing bring in medical mental health professional. Yes. I mean, that's got to be it, right? Yeah.
Right. That's right. Then it's a referral. Well, so that, and then helping somebody recognize that to go ahead and talk to a mental health professional is not a sign of weakness. Now, it's a sign of strength to address the issues that you're dealing with.
Yeah. So, love that.
And that's really a big thing.
Yeah.
Students will say that all the time.
Good on you for adding that and recognizing that was an area, something you wanted to work on, then going out and getting that mental health first aid and adding that to your credential. That's great. I love when people have, like, you know, miniature soapboxes too. And I think we touched on this when we first met, was one of those is ageism and recognizing it and how it impacts care. When I throw out that term ageism, where's your head go?
So, well, the first thing that my head goes to is actually internal ageism, like how much all of us walk around with this preconceived notion, and we don't even realize it, that as we get older, we've just been inundated with, if it's social media, if it's commercials, if it's television, depending on how old you are, how long this has been going on, you know, and actually our older patients have been subjected to it even longer. So they have so much internal ageism that is a real hard fight. And many physical therapists or occupational therapists will talk about, you know, they don't believe they can get better.
Right.
You know, they really just feel this is because, as they'll start the conversation, well, I'm 85 years old, so what do you expect? Now, and so that internal ageism of recognizing how we think about ourselves and how that's going to guide our own health as we age. That was something that I was the instructor for the intro to geriatrics at TWU at the time frame that I was there. And that was one of the big points I tried to bring home to the students. Think about yourself. Like, what's your own perception of growing older? Because our students come into school very ageist.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so, and if they are ageist to start, then that means that if they have an older individual in front of them that will be their patient, their perception of how that person can improve or what they can do with that person is already skewed. So that we have to really recognize, and you have to be able to recognize that, oh, I'm falling back on thinking, well, you know, it's a certain number and this number is the deciding factor.
Right.
When in reality, you know, you can have a 30-year-old whose functional abilities and limitations are so low that they will not be able to be at the same physical level of some of my 85-year-olds.
Right.
So it's not about the number. It's about what are the comorbidities, what are the psychosocial issues that are on top of all this? You know, so it's, but we are so quick as soon as somebody gets over the age of 65 to put everything in a basket of, well, you know, this is what happened.
Right. I mean, it's going to sound like I planned this, but I swear I did not. I'm 39 years old as we record this, and I'm coming up on 40. And believe me, I was having a miniature midlife crisis today. I was thinking, well, I don't know how much I could really expect. And this was twofold. This was function, because I'm having like a little bit of an ankle issue, and I used to be a runner, and I, you know, I still try to run in triathlons. And I'm saying, well, maybe I just hang that up. But if I were hearing that from a patient, I'd be on that guy or that girl and say, no, absolutely not. We're going to find something that keeps you moving. And then, of course, like, you know, coming up on the midlife crisis, the over the hill, what have I accomplished? You know, am I pretty much done? Am I already peaked? But that's good to recognize. One word that was brought up at an episode we just released a little while ago with Jackie Osborne, who teaches geriatrics at Brooks IHL, was the word still. Oh, you're 75. Oh, are you still, you're still riding a bike? It's almost as that, like, it's subtly, and I'm definitely guilty of it myself, is making, using that word still and kind of making a big deal about, oh, what you're saying is that's not the norm. Maybe you shouldn't be doing that. So recognizing that in ourselves, and I guess today I was even guilty of that myself.
Right. And the other thing, it goes the other way, is that sometimes we don't recognize that we start, like when somebody is older, we start protecting them more.
Right.
Like if it's a family member, if it's a friend, or, and that's like I forget the name of the individual. It was a wonderful podcast that was done on Dustin Jones, Jerry Jarrow's community. But it was and she was a physical therapist. And actually I give this podcast as one of my, one of a reflection assignments for my third year students, but I can't remember her name. But she talked about pre-traumatic stress syndrome, where we instill fear so that, you know, oh, the person's 80. Well, you know, maybe you shouldn't take stairs anymore.
Right.
So, you know, you really should reconsider riding the bike. Cause you know, if you fall off the bike, you're going to break something.
Right.
You're 80 now.
I like that. Yeah, pre-traumatic stress.
So we start scaring people into not moving and not feeling capable and not understanding that the body is so resilient. That's the other positive thing about working in this profession for so long, is that I have seen people recover and come back to 100% plus in situations where no one thought it was possible at all ages. So the resilience, the ability of the body, and sometimes I just say, like, if we stay out of its way, the body usually really comes along. Don't, you know, just let people move and do okay. And don't. So I really feel that we have to be aware of the innate ability to heal and not forget that. Yeah. You know, and there is a time frame, of course, we're all going to die. I mean, there's not you know, that certainly is going to happen. And there's only so, and there, we need a point in time when the systems are going to break down. But our hope as we go older is that this level of all these comorbidities sort of falling in and is a short time frame. So instead of somebody sort of slowly degenerating over 20 years, losing function, but still alive, we maybe have 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so we've really given someone the optimum ability to age, to be highly functional, to manage substitutions and compensations that still allow them to do the things they want. And you can't do that if you don't believe people have a chance.
Yeah. That's the internal ageism. You know, it's not, mm-hmm. you know, things are going to happen. That's a progression. It's a great progression of life. That's the part of life. Making sure you've got some life, some life in those years, not just adding years to the life, as that cliche goes.
That's right. And no individual would say that's what they want anyway.
Right. 100%. Yeah. Every orthopedic physical therapist needs to know how to recognize and screen for vestibular dysfunction. That's something that you want to brand on every single student, every single PT that you come across. Why are you so passionate about that?
Because there's way too many people out there with vestibular dysfunction that are not being picked up, and it's causing so much trouble for all these other, you know, now we have all this balance. And then you put that on top of somebody with multiple comorbidities and they have benign positional vertigo, which is a really simple thing to go ahead and screen for, to do a differential diagnosis and treat. However, and so every orthopedic facility and most of the outpatient facilities that I have either had as my own private practice or worked in, I have tried to train everyone to be able to pick up BPPV so that I'm not the only, it should not be that this is a specialist doing this.
Right.
It's entry-level training now. Every entry-level program has a section on vestibular dysfunction and on benign positional vertigo with the cannulus repositioning maneuver. So certainly students within the last 10 years, maybe even a little bit more than that, have been exposed to this. But the problem comes when they enter the clinic. We still, and I don't know why this has happened, we start siloing everything again. Oh, no, I'm an orthopedic physical therapist. Oh, that's a neuro problem. And I had this happen with one of my family members just in the last month. The person had a total hip replacement, had an episode of BPPV, and he's in outpatient orthopedics. And they have a balance center, but they don't have anybody who does vestibular work. I was like, don't say you have a balance center.
Wow.
So he had to be sent to another place, which is long. You know, it takes time then, right? This should be something. Somebody comes in with those symptoms, especially if it's any kind of risk for balance and falls. We got to take care of that. Yep. That should be priority.
Yep. Well, I think this goes twofold. Number one, the public doesn't necessarily know about these conditions and that they can be treated so simply with, and on top of that, with a physical therapist, that we automatically assume, well, we need to go to some sort of brain expert who has the, you know, all this different neurologic training. Oh, by the way, physical therapists have that training and they can help. But also, as you just mentioned, PTs, if they don't consider themselves, and I'm using air quotes here, vestibular experts, we shy away from it. So we're widening that gap along with the public's perception of what this issue could be and how easily it might be treated if they see a PT. That gap is widening on two parts. So I love the fact that that's one of your mini soapboxes to make sure that the PT end of it anyway, of our profession, steps forward and says, no, I'm gonna own this because I'm not a neuro PT. I'm not an ortho PT. I'm a PT.
Right. The numbers of people that this is such a common type of diagnosis and dysfunction, so that I guarantee you're seeing more than one person in your clinical life within the first year. So it's like, and there's no reason, and it's such a valuable treatment technique. It's the highest level of evidence for these treatment techniques. And so when we talk about we do evidence-based practice, this is also something that bothers me. I'm like, oh, well, okay, then everybody should know how to do this because right. this has the highest level of evidence. But no, does what we have is, and currently this has been with the Tide, and I'm not saying that dry needle, I mean, I've taken dry needling courses. I'm not saying this is a bad thing to know or be able to do, but it's like everybody and their mother is on that bandwagon right now.
Right.
So, and we do not have the same level of evidence. We might soon, but we don't have it. So as an evidence-based practitioner, I say we should be following and doing what we know we have evidence for. And there is nothing out there that has this kind of evidence in the world of PT. So this has been well done.
One thing we got to own. So, yeah. We got to own it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is being a neuro PT, being an ortho PT, being a vestibular PT, is that sort of siloization, is that something that's come and gone before? Or is this something like kind of new now we want to be so narrow?
I actually think it's worsening. Wow. So, you know, we definitely didn't, when I first started, it was the beginning of the board certification. So I took right. the second OCS exam.
Wow.
I took the second GCS exam. So that was the very beginning. We didn't, what we might have, like I had an NDT certification. We had some of those clinical certifications, but no one, I mean, we saw like, cause I was an acute care outpatient. Basically, you saw everybody. I mean, right. you couldn't be siloed because they were all coming to you. You were a PT.
Yeah.
But now, I don't know. I mean, part of me feels we've done a disservice in becoming so focused, so specialized. There certainly should be super specialists. I'm not saying we can't have some of them out there, but I think we're losing the PT who's capable. I think the only time it still happens is if you're in rural areas because right. you have no choice.
Right.
But if you're not in a rural area, then I see people track themselves very quickly. You know, and we have all residencies. I think residencies are excellent. In my time of study, we didn't have that opportunity. We sort of had to create our own little group of residents and do that to be able to pass exams and to continue to learn. So I think residencies are wonderful. Fellowships are wonderful. And I know, especially like at Brooks, they integrate all the different fellows and residencies. They're talking to each other. They take courses together. They mix neuro, like all the orthopedic, all of the ortho residents are going to take some of the neuro courses. And I know that they're teaching them how to do the assessment for benign positional vertigo. So I see mix in happening in certain areas, but still like, oh no, you know, the hand comes up. Well, that's just not my thing. I don't know how to do that.
Right.
But if you don't know how to do it, then you better know who to refer to. So I don't have any problem with somebody not knowing how to do it.
Good
but
point.
Then you got to have the list of who do you send them to?
Good point. Yeah. So, be a great advocate for that patient then in that particular situation.
Right.
All right.
Right. You don't just ignore it.
Yep. All right. Kathy, you ready for three questions?
Okay.
On the hot seat with three questions on the PT Pinecast.
All right, three questions brought to you by Arias Medical Staffing. They're our longtime supporter of the show. 50 states, that's where they have positions in all 50 of those states. Yes, Alaska. Yes, Hawaii. Yes, Colorado. You want to do it in the near the ocean. Like Kathy, she finds shark teeth on the beach in Jacksonville. That's what she does in her spare time. But get to do what you want to do, where you want to do it. They've been finding physical therapists and physical therapist assistants jobs for several decades now, and they've got the gamut of information covered. Not only do they have the positions, and they'll find you a spot that you want to be in, where you want to be in, but then the other stuff, like how do you find housing, and what about taxes and health insurance, like all those things that come with it, which I see as sometimes they're the barrier of people jumping into travel PT. They've got all that covered. So if you check out what positions they have there, it goes deeper than that. So AURUSmedical.com. You know, it's no obligation. You know, if you sign up, they want to make sure they find a spot for you that fits for you and where they're sending you. So very, very low stress. If you've met anybody from RAS, believe me, it's complete low stress. So AURUSmedical.com. So Kathy, the first question on three questions is a where question. You've been all over the country, a couple different spots. Mm-hmm. If you could go anywhere in the 50 U.S. states and be a PT for a little bit, where's something somewhere you haven't been that you wouldn't mind going to?
I think, where I haven't been. Huh. I've been to almost every state, but I would love to go out west. So I went to Glacier National Park last summer, and oh my gosh. So maybe Montana. Beautiful, beautiful area. That was quite spectacular. So I'll say Montana.
Never hear anybody talking bad about Montana. Second question is a what question? What's something that you've watched or read or listened to
that's really inspired you or something you'd suggest that if someone listening should take a listen or a watch to?
Well, I have read pretty much every book that Atul Gawande has written. So I would highly recommend just pick up anything with his name on it and go for it.
Yeah, love that. His name comes up a lot. And I've just started. I've jumped back. I mean, after you leave PT school, you're kind of like shell-shocked on reading stuff. I was anyway. So I stayed away from books. And I've just caught the bug again. And I've got a big old deep Amazon book list. So he's definitely on there as well. And last question on three questions is who's somebody the audience should know more about? This is a way we can help, you know, expand someone's follow network, maybe using social media in a great way to follow someone who brings a lot of value, but maybe they're flying under the radar.
Somebody flying under the radar. I would have to say Mike Eisenhart.
Yeah.
And all the work that he is doing in health promotion and wellness and really trying to change the way we look at that and how we try to bring that into our own work. It's another idea of, well, we can't avoid that. Like, the basics should be somebody has sound nutrition and sound sleep, you know, because before we can do anything else to them, if that's not happening, we won't have optimum outcomes. So I think this idea of looking at wellness and all those different aspects of wellness, which is something that he does well, and that's just like a little piece of all the stuff he's doing. I would have to say Mike Eisenhower.
Yeah, but how are you going to sell a sexy Con Ed course on sleep and nutrition, Kathy? How are you going to do that?
I know.
Yeah, that's the basics, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you've seen anything on social media about the Summer of Move or Free the Yoke,
that's
Mike Eisenhart. Uh-huh. So I don't think he gets enough credit for starting those things, and then they get legs of their own and they start to spread. So if you guys want to follow Mike Eisenhart, it's at Mike Eisenhart, and that's Eisenhart. So that's a great call. You said you didn't have a good suggestion. That was a perfect one.
There you go.
All right, you're off the hot seat for three questions from Arias Medical Staffing. Again, you want to try out, dip your toe in, or at least check out the opportunities for travel PT to, you know, try different settings in different places. It's AURESmedical.com. Here we go.
This is The Parting Shot.
All right, Parting Shot is brought to you by Rock Tape. Check them out. They have more than just tape. They are a movement company. Classes for movement, classes for the tools they offer, the Rock Pods, the Rock Blades, the Mohawk, the Kinesio Tape. So more than just a Kinesio company, they are Rock Tape. Check them out online at rocktape.com. Rockstock is coming up as well. Kathy, if you were to leave the audience with one parting shot, one sentiment, one little bit of advice, what's something they should remember and should never forget?
And if the audience is mostly physical therapists, then I'm going to say that don't forget that you need to reach out to all of our interdisciplinary colleagues, and you will learn things that will change your life in your own profession if you're willing to see what they're doing and understand how to integrate all of the disciplines. So it'll help you with communication with physicians, with OTs, with nurses. Learn how to reach out, build connection, establish respect across the board, and we will all be better.
Love that. Kathy, I'm glad we ran into each other, and I'm glad you came up and said hi and said, hey, I listened to the show. And
well, thanks, Jimmy. Well, I'm really happy to be on. You keep on doing what you're doing because it's helping us all.
Our home on the internet. PTPintcast.com. Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.